Hello, and welcome to Asians Represent. I'm Daniel Kwan.
And I'm Agatha Chang.
And we're your hosts.
And today's topic is magical girls.
This is also the first episode that you've taken the job, the main job of interviewer.
Yeah, I got pretty hype. You will be able to hear that. We go into some deep dives about anime.
Yeah, I was hella... I learned a lot.
You did.
I learned a lot.
You had the Pikachu eyes. If y'all have seen that meme, the Pikachu meme.
The Pikachu meme?
Where Pikachu's mouth is like open.
Yeah, that's me.
Yeah, that was your face.
Maybe we should try to Photoshop my face onto Pikachu looking like that.
Sure.
I don't know. We'll see.
That's a thing.
Go follow us on Instagram at AZNSrepresent.
Which may or may not feature Daniel's face on a Pikachu.
I just think of Ryan Reynolds in the new Pokemon Detective Pikachu movie.
Don't talk to me about it.
I'm really excited. And then when he's fighting Charizard, he goes, Pika, Pika.
I hate it so much. Okay, but
so
anyway.
Who's our featured creator for this episode?
Our featured guest is Brother Ming, who is an anime enthusiast who makes anime board games for fun. And he has two games out already. One is called Fire Emblem, and one is based on Fire Emblem. The other one is based on Persona 5, and they've both been featured on Kotaku, and I think one of them is no longer available. It's a fan game.
The Fire Emblem game got shut down by Nintendo within like days of Kotaku writing about it.
Yeah, literally days, because it's a Nintendo.
Nintendo doesn't like independent creators using their content.
Yeah, but he knows a lot about anime and also a lot about magical girls as a genre, so we go into some deep
dives. Way more than both of us combined.
Oh, that's true. Definitely.
I feel like I contributed maybe a sliver of it. I've watched Sailor Moon, which you haven't watched.
I know, it's true. It's a travesty.
And I watched all of Cardcaptor Sakura.
Mm-hmm. Good show.
Yep, and I think those are the only two that came up. Because everything else that thought was Magical Girl was just like straight up shoujo.
Yeah, true. True.
Yeah.
Which
I've read
that.
A lot of.
Yeah, yeah.
Which I have read a lot of.
Yeah, you read some of the crazy stuff.
But yeah, this is a good episode. This is a good episode. Mm-hmm. So before we get into the interview, I want to ask, like, Agatha, what's new with you?
What's new with me? Well, I came back from Dreamation and it was so fun. I freaking LARPed the whole way, and except for one game, which is Kat Ramis.
That was, yeah.
Red Carnations on a Black Grave, and it's going to be on Kickstarter soon, but not yet. And it's so fun. It's really depressing. And I also LARPed Cleo Yunsu Davis's game.
Yeah, after we talked about it on the podcast.
Yeah, it's the one, But Not Tonight, which is about when you're high schoolers who all gather into this bomb shelter, and I think during the 80s, and then you don't know if there is a nuclear apocalypse going on outside, and you also want to deal with your feelings. It was so good.
Dang.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Dreamation.
See, Dreamation. And if you're listening to this episode now, dear listener, we'll have done a lot already.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we'll have all four of the Asians Represent people, you, myself, Jade, and of course, our friend Amar.
Yeah.
We'll have already gone to Breakout Con.
Mm-hmm.
Jade will have already gone to GDC because Jade's leaving us for video games. I'm just kidding.
Mm-hmm.
No, that's not true. And is there anything else? We've got those two cons.
Yeah. What projects are you working on?
Well, you're working on.
I'm working on. Well, I have just been announced as the co-author of Hearts of Ulian, which is the PBTA game powered by the Apocalypse game about wuxia melodrama, and it is so fun. We don't. There's nothing to follow yet, but I will update us.
We're going to do a whole episode on it.
Yes, we will talk about Hero.
Yeah, we're going to talk about Hero, House of Flying Daggers.
Yeah, yeah.
We're going to talk about it all.
Yeah, we're going to talk about
Crouching Tiger.
We're going to talk about your favorite dude, Donnie Yen.
Donnie Yen.
Yes.
I hope he's okay.
He's fine.
I hope so.
He is.
I'm worried about him.
He went back on set. It's all good.
Will he ever be the same? I don't know. But we'll learn about my love for Donnie Yen.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, you're doing Hearts of Ulin, and that's super exciting that you're, because you went from being a developmental consultant to being co-author.
Yeah, I was.
Which is awesome.
Yeah, I was just the sensitivity reader, which I still am, actually. These are separate roles. But now I'm also co-author. Went from zero to hero. I don't know.
No, you went from hero to hero because you're already a hero.
Yeah.
So you got that going on. Anything else you got going on?
No, that's it for now.
All right.
We'll get some other stuff, but I don't remember.
You don't remember. We can talk about that when we talk about Hearts of Wu and Wuxia.
Mm-hmm.
I'm working on a couple things right now.
Ooh.
I am the developmental editor for Dino Wranglers, which is a family-friendly sort of sci-fi fantasy token-based RPG.
Mm.
That's on Kickstarter right now. I'm the developmental editor and sensitivity reader, and I'm writing a section on Asians in cowboy sort of films. I'm doing developmental editing for that one. I'm doing sensitivity reading for a game called Lawless Heaven by my pal Fraser Ronald.
Okay.
And I'm also a sensitivity reader on a game called Honor Awakening by Dom Perry, Nine Dragons Publishing.
Ooh.
So yeah, three games. Two of them involve, you know, Asian cultures.
Ooh.
And they involve Asian people in the development.
Yay.
With, you know, you're co-authoring Hearts of Wulin, which is amazing.
Yeah, I'm co-authoring with Lowell Francis.
Yeah, I mean, I'm super excited for you because this is going to be your, like, your first game.
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah, and it's going to be great.
Yeah, I'm very excited.
And we have one other thing that we got going on, that you and I have got going on, and that's Masks New Shambhala.
New Shambhala.
And we're actually sitting at a table right now about to record episode one, and we're joined by
Amar
and Jade.
Yeah, and they've been listening to us the whole time.
Yeah, we've been eyeing them to make sure.
I know, I've been like, making
don't talk until we tell you to talk.
Do not drink that water.
Amar, don't you dare take a sip of that tea. But New Shambhala episode zero is out, and the reception has been great.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Reception has been wonderful. People seem to really like these characters and this world.
Yeah, we created a very fascinating world, a very fascinating city, so you should really check it out.
Yeah, and if you haven't listened to episode zero, that's out on iTunes and Spotify right now. It will also be on the One Shot Network website. Mm-hmm. I'm going to post it tonight when I get after we're done recording.
You can do it.
Yeah.
I called him out on it.
Yeah, Jade called me out on it. It's okay. It's good to be kept in check. We're all keeping each other in check.
Yeah.
That's why a team is important.
Yes.
But yeah, episode zero is out, and we're about to record episode one. Now, it is March right now. Episode one will not come out until April.
Mm-hmm.
But if you are a member of the One Shot Podcast Patreon, you will have access to episode one a month ahead.
Yeah.
A month ahead. Now, don't worry, because it's going to come out the month later. But if you really liked episode zero and, you know, you yourself want to be a superhero, you want to play a superhero game, maybe you want to follow along, play a game in New Shambhala as we flesh out this world as well, get a copy of Masks. Head to magpiegames.com because they have generously supported New Shambhala.
Mm-hmm.
Use code AZNSREPRESENT and get a 20% off your order of any mask product until the end of March.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, enough about masks because this episode is about magical girls.
Yes!
And please give it up for Brother Ming.
Yeah, let's talk about what is our first memory of a magical girl anime that we watched. So, what is it for you, Ming?
Oh, okay. Just jumping right into it.
This is a good try opener. All
right.
Okay.
So, sorry, my first magical girl anime or just anime in general?
Oh, we could do, okay, first anime and then first magical girl.
Okay, so first anime I ever watched was when I was in China, and it was either Beyblades or Martian successor Nadesco. I can't remember which. It was about the same around the same time.
Wait, what's the second one? I know Beyblades.
Martian successor Nadesco, which is a really old school mecha anime, and it was really popular at the time when I was like five. And I remember seeing it, and then my dad bought me the VCD set.
Nice.
So yeah, I've been into anime since way too long ago.
I have never heard of that one.
It's actually a really good show. Martian Succession Nadesco. I lost touch with anime because it wasn't airing on TV anymore once I moved to America. And then when I was in middle school, I discovered anime streaming websites, and then dove right back into it. And then I rewatched Martian Successor Nadesco sometime in high school, and it's actually a really, really good show. It's a very dark mecha anime. Part of that whole generation of, you know, Evangelion.
Yeah.
Like Gundam Wing. I was making it to America.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't know. Oh, if we're thinking about like first anime that we watched, that's very hard for me to know. Yeah, because
it was a long time ago.
Yeah, and also because it was constantly on TV when I was in Taiwan. And I feel like it's either Chibi Maruko-chan, which is
this, another one I don't know.
This is the elementary school girl who like is just living out her life, trying to survive and chilling with her friends and or grandpa, and her sister is
chilling with her friends and her grandpa.
Yeah.
And that's the show.
Yeah.
This is like a slice of life.
It is. It's slice of life before slice of life became an actual genre.
Like Yatsuba.
Yatsuba was good. I like Yatsuba. Super that's good. A cute slice of life.
Is that the hot spring? No.
That's the one with the little girl with the green hair.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah,
oh,
she's really one. Cute. And yeah. The big sister. And just hijinks is one of those hijinks.
Yeah.
A four coma turned into anime.
Yeah.
Does, what was that? Okay, so I'm trying to think of animes for me. Mm-hmm. And like, we were just talking earlier and we said Pokemon.
Yeah.
Like, I feel like Pokemon's a big one for most people. Like Pokemon, Dragon Ball Z, Gundam Wing.
Yeah, in the West, for sure.
Yeah.
What's it called? Escaflowne.
Oh, yeah.
I haven't watched that.
That was on Toonami, wasn't it?
Yeah, that was around the same time. Yeah. And then I'm sitting weird because I'm trying to fix my our power option over here. Oh, okay. And what was the last one? I guess Sailor Moon and Cardcaptor Sakura. But I never really knew that Yu-Gi-Oh. Those were anime. Yu-Gi-Oh. Oh, Yu-Gi-Oh! Yes.
Yeah, yeah. I feel like
there's a lot of popular for kids ones. One Piece, Yu Yu Hakusho.
Yeah,
and then you know transition to like the big Shonen Jump transitions, like Naruto, of course.
Yo,
Naruto's life though.
I have never watched One Piece.
One Piece?
Oh. You don't need to. It's still going, it never ends, so it's okay.
It's okay. Yeah. I mean, I used to really love it.
It depends. People who like it really like it. It's such a long form show. It's like it's you know how people describe certain games as lifestyle games? Like Magic the Gathering is a lifestyle game. One Piece is a lifestyle anime.
Yeah, I mean, when I say One Piece is okay, being a person who will never not love it, even though I understand all of its flaws. Like it's just that makes so much sense.
Wait. Can we first explain what is a lifestyle? What do you mean by lifestyle game? Like Magic being a lifestyle game?
Yeah,
like,
so in a lot of games,
it costs so much money, it changes your lifestyle.
So no. Shade.
Hey, I only heard the term pretty recently during topics like we were talking about KeyForge.
KeyForge.
A lifestyle game is just it's a game that you revolve your life around. The game doesn't enter your life; your life enters it.
Oh, like every single game I play.
Yeah, like League of Legends is a lifestyle game, whereas Final Fantasy is not a lifestyle game, right? It enters your life and then you finish it and then it leaves your life.
Oh, I see. Oh. So I think one of the components is that it needs to go on forever.
One Piece is
or you need to develop a deep addiction to it.
Yeah, One Piece, and then for me, Case Closed or Detective
Case
Conan.
Closed. Oh. Certainly was a lifestyle anime.
Which one's that?
That was the one with the young boy who solves crimes and he wears a bow tie.
I thought that was Detective Conan.
It is Detective Conan.
It's the same code. Yeah, same name.
Oh, it's the same name.
In the West, they call it Case Closed.
Oh.
Yo, that show like scarred me when I was a kid. Because it used to be really dark and a lot more explicit, I think.
Right.
So then like they show you like all these death scenes and then but it's like marketed for kids and then so I watched it and I was like, oh, I'm so scared.
Oh god, remember with the direction that you're speaking.
Yeah, that's true.
Oh my god.
Yeah, but first magical girl show though.
Okay, okay, let's get back onto the topic. So we're talking about magical girls today.
Yes.
My first magical girl show. Oh man. I mean, I wanna say it's probably Tokyo Mew Mew. Because I missed out. I mean, I watched a couple of episodes of Cardcaptor and Sailor Moon, but I didn't like watch it. But I watched Tokyo Mew Mew when it was on, I think, 4Kids.
Can you explain that one? I have never heard of it.
Oh my gosh, Tokyo Mew Mew. No, I mean, they have like cat ears, I think. Isn't that what
well,
it was?
The, the main character is a cat, Gears, but all of the different magical girls, their mascots were, instead of just being masks, like straight up plushies, were plushies of different animals. So one was a dolphin, another one was, I think, a monkey. So it was like, so yeah, instead of being magical girls, they were magical amapomorphic.
Like anthropomorphic?
Yeah.
Yeah, magical girls instead.
Yeah, I remember Tokyo Mimi was definitely aimed towards young women, but it was like one of the ones that was like a little more, I don't know, it's not like adult, but it was like a little bit explored like relationships more than like say Cardcaptor Sakura did.
Yeah, because that wasn't really
relationship. I think it was more childish, I think. In retrospect, I think it was more childish. But that's because I think Cardcaptor Sakura and Sailor Moon in the West was heavily edited to make it less adult.
Mm. Oh, okay. Yeah, that's very interesting. Yeah, because I never watched... I only watched Cardcaptor Sakura like here in the West. So... I guess I never knew. And I never watched an episode of Sailor Moon, so.
So for me, Sailor Moon was always like, there's this guy in Sailor Moon named Tuxedo Mask.
Yes, it's true.
And
that's
his
true
thing
story.
Was like, he would like throw these roses.
Yeah!
Let me tell you a story about Tuxedo Mask and young Daniel.
Okay, go for it.
So he always had this thing where he would make this like really flashy entrance.
Mm-hmm.
And he would like throw the rose. I remember, oh, this is just coming back to me now. I remember when I was a kid going into my parents' backyards and trying to throw flowers like Tuxedo Mask and being like,
yes,
why the fuck aren't they sticking into the ground?
Oh, so bad.
Hey, I mean, it happens to every generation. That's why the Naruto run is such a big deal, and now we have Fortnite dances.
Oh god.
Oh wow.
Every generation of kids want to emulate how cool the characters look.
Oh yeah.
And it's not until we're adults that we realize, wow, we were really lame.
Yeah.
I still stand by me being cool.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's a scientific method, right? Like you're trying it out and you're like, I've seen this happen before, so it should work in real life.
It should in theory work in real life.
Yeah, I mean, if it did, that'd be so sick though. I mean, also right? Also dangerous.
Super dangerous though. Super dangerous.
Yeah, I don't know what. Okay, so I think my first magical girl anime was probably Cardcaptor Sakura then. Since I never watched Sailor Moon, even though when I was a kid, I remember when I was in kindergarten, and then I used to play with my classmates, and then they would assign different sailors.
Different sailors?
Yeah.
Are they the Sailor Scouts, right? Is that it?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and they always told me I should be Sailor Mercury because I wore glasses. Wait.
Does she wear glasses?
Doesn't she wear glasses? Yeah, she does. She has blue hair and she wears glasses. And I was always like, that's rude. You know? If I were to choose now,
that's
I would
rude.
Be.
Rude.
Yeah, because, I don't know. They picked all the ones with long hair and I wanted long hair. Mm-hmm. So Tokyo Mew. Wow.
Yeah, I looked
Tokyo Mew Mew and Sailor Moon, they were part of that. Like, so I guess talking about, you know, magical girls, they were on the side of magical girls that was more Sentai trained. So that's why, like, certainly, like, with, you know, both Tokyo Mew Mew and Sailor Moon, like, when they got really big, you had kids being like, I'm the cat or I'm Mercury.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
It fosters that kind of, like, self-insertion because, like, all the girls have to have very different personalities so
yes.
you can relate to at least one of them.
Yes.
And then this way they can sell merchandising really well.
Yes, definitely.
Right? Whereas with shows like Cardcaptor Sakura, it was more so, I would argue Cardcaptor Sakura was almost more adult-oriented because it actually explored a lot of really, and especially not just the first show, like because it has such long continuity.
Yeah.
Basically, I might be wrong on this, mm-hmm. but I'm pretty sure like there's this older guy in Cardcaptor Sakura who was hinted at being romantically interested in Sakura, but then actually ends up being the ancestor of
the guy with
mage,
like the gray hair.
Yeah, the guy with the glasses. He's
like, kind of creepy at first. He was always like weirdly.
Yeah, I was into him though. Watching as a kid, I was like, "Oh my gosh, he's so hot!"
An older friend?
No, like an older hot guy.
Yeah, that's what I mean.
But yeah, I think in the show he ends up being like the ancestor of a great mage or something. Yeah, and like it gets really complicated. Sakura gets way more complicated because the team behind it has built this giant multiverse around that universe, which is really cool.
Yeah, so that's Clamp, right?
Yeah, Clamp. If you ever read, you know, XXX Holic, or if you've ever read Tsubasa Reservoir Chronicles, they're all built into this giant multiverse Cardcaptor Sue.
Are those two Magical Girl series then?
No.
Oh, okay, because I was like, I read both of those.
They're set within the same multiverse, basically.
there was a second where I was like, oh, I might know something. No, I don't. I think that's indicative of the fact that I don't know what the magical girl genre is.
Yeah.
Like, how do you define it?
Yeah. I mean, like, if we're thinking about just like the history of the magical girl genre, it's actually so interesting when I was doing just a little bit research into it. Because like the first magical girl shows, like this was like, I think the first one was in 1966. Yeah. They were actually inspired by the American sitcom Bewitched, which is like where this lady who's a witch, she marries
Bewitched.
Yeah, she marries this dude and she's like, oh, let me solve all my daily issues with magic. And then that was like cited as the inspiration for two shows. One is Yokoyama Miteru's Mahoutsukai Sally, which is Sally the Witch. And also let's see, Akatsuka Fujio. Akasaka Fujio's Himitsu no Ako-chan, which is like another one. They're both like from 1966, and I find that so interesting that it's like even at the root of it was like Western inspired. But
I'm sure we're going to revisit this.
Yeah. and so like but at that time, like those two shows were both pretty wholesome because they're like, you know, it's the 60s and then they're just like girls and then a lot about like living their life and then finding their identity while like navigating through issues that every young woman would encounter.
Yeah.
So like,
and that's basically what the genre is about.
Sort of. Yeah.
Where it used to be.
Yes. It's certainly expanded a lot in my opinion. But yeah, like who do you think is the intended audience then?
I guess we can pivot towards, so we've talked about, you know, classic magical girl shows. I think we can pivot towards modern day. And I would say the modern magical girl anime starts with, Madoka Magica. And it's really hard to talk about magical girls nowadays without bringing that show up at least once.
Yeah.
And so it's not the first of its kind to be subversive or deconstruction of the genre. The same director before it directed magical Maho Shoujo Lyrica Nanoha. Nanoha.
Yeah. Oh.
But that one was a little bit more traditional. It just had really grim backstories for the girls. But nobody died, right? And it wasn't really a deconstruction of the genre.
Yeah.
Right.
But with modern day, basically, I think once that subversion came through, once the deconstruction came through, the target audience definitely pivoted towards, well, here are all the people who grew up watching magical girl shows. And now they're adults. We can basically deconstruct and subvert the genre to ask the questions that they didn't ask when they were 5 to 10 years old, right?
Yeah.
Because Madoka Magica basically was like, where did this magical mascot come from?
Right.
Where did the bad people come from?
Right.
Why are people fighting? And it's very interesting. Basically, every anime since then, which I think was 8 years ago, every magical girl anime since there has either tried to emulate what Madoka has done and failed, pivoted towards the same idea, but in a comedy sense, or have gone one step further. to subvert what Madoka was,
right.
A subversion of the subversion, which is, you know, 8 years later, that's to be expected. And there's a great example of it right now, the current season's Magical Girl Spec Ops Asuka, which I watched a good bit about, and whenever we want to start really talking about the subversion of the subversion, this is a good anime to talk about, because it is.
Whoa, I just looked that up.
So I'm going to list out briefly what I think defines a magical girl genre.
Yeah, that's not what I thought.
She got guns.
Well, yeah. So I feel like at its core, or at least at its starting point, magical girl genres were, as a genre, was about... It started off as a way for young women to see themselves, explore what it's like to grow up and to hit puberty, basically. And because, like, there are so many shows, the older magical girl shows, where it's like in their normal self, they're maybe in elementary school or maybe middle school. But then when they do their magical transformation, they turn into adults. So adult women who also happen to have magical powers. And that's basically just it's just a metaphor for growing up and then living adult lives with adult decisions. And it's magic, but it's also it's very interesting. And they're like exploring like dressing up and then like playmaking, what it's like to be an adult woman.
So is it like,
and certainly the genre has had basically, yes, they're typically middle or elementary schools, typically middle school, if I'm getting it right. But yeah, the series, if a magical show has an ending, it's always ending with them graduating or defeating the evil and then being able to move on as a non-magical girl.
But yeah.
Like actually matured past being middle school.
Yeah. In which case.
Mm-hmm. So yeah, they're definitely about maturing as young.
So you said, Agatha, you said something about them turning into adults.
Yeah.
So it's like in Sailor Moon when they don their costumes, they turn into adults. Is that what it is?
Yeah.
And it's like Shazam, like the DC comic. The DC comic Shazam.
Yes.
It's kind of like that.
I guess so.
Like
it's not that extreme.
Not that extreme. Okay, cool. I'm trying to frame it in my head.
Oh yeah, for sure.
Because up until this point, my understanding of it only comes from two shows.
Yeah, that's fair.
And then a couple others that a couple of minutes ago I thought might have been it, but not. Because when I think of like Cardcaptors, I'm like, oh, this is slice of life. This is like exploring, like you said, the themes of growing up.
Yeah.
But also while being empowered.
Yeah.
With these, well, I mean, Sakura's ability to literally capture cards.
Yeah.
And twirl batons.
Yeah.
Like what?
Yeah, she's pretty good at it.
Pretty damn good at that.
Yeah. Right? And I guess another defining element in these shows is there's always got to be some kind of like jewelry or some kind of plasticky looking thing. Yeah, tiara that you can then sell as a toy.
Certainly merchandising.
To monetize.
Yeah, so the tenet of the show is, I guess since to explain it even further down to just as basics, not talking about themes or anything. Magical Girl anime as the last 20 years, basically, the modern generation of it. Because older ones, Princess Tutu and them, are a little bit different. But the modern formula of it is monsters show up and they're evil and they do evil things. A magical mascot appears, usually in the shape of a plushie that can be very easily sold.
Oh, like Kira.
And that, plushie mascot then recruits an innocent, usually middle or elementary school girl to fight the evil. The powers are always typically explained as, you know, it's drawn upon their innocence, upon their idealism. And then several episodes of Monster of the Weeks later, they eventually defeat the evil. And the tenets of that is they always transform, and they always transform using some kind of magical item. And so that's basically the core of what makes a magical girl show a magical girl show.
Yeah.
So transformation, empowerment.
Transformation sees, yes.
And like an external evil.
Yeah.
Yes.
So, I mean, I kind of want to talk about like intended audience for the show, because when you said Maho Shoujo Liberal Nanoha, I was immediately like, yes, I remember that.
Can you say that slower so I can look that up?
Oh, sorry. Oh, Maho Shoujo
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Found lyrical Nanoha. I remember when that came out and I was immediately like, oh, I'm not interested in this. And the reason is because it's in the style of pretty girls anime, but for guys. Mm-hmm. And I was like, this is not for me.
That was a show targeted for a male audience. Wait, for sure.
So because would this be a shoujo show then?
No, that's a shonen show.
Shonen, sorry.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yo, speaking of shoujo, never mind. We'll get there later. I got really into shoujo manga in high school.
Bless up.
Like really into it. Like I read.
Is it actually shoujo manga though?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Like
Marmalade Boy.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
That was my first favorite shoujo. I was really into shoujo as well. Fruits Basket.
Fruits Basket read all of that one
yeah,
too.
Yeah, Fruits Basket was depressing. Hot Gimmick?
It was.
Oh, like Hot Gimmick?
I read all 13 books.
Hot Gimmick was rude. Every time I read it, I was like, I don't like this.
Like, I didn't quite read it. Like I was reading that,
it was awesome.
I was like, this one of the dudes is like objectively terrible.
Mm.
Like the lead dude.
Mm.
And I was reading it and I was like, I can't stop reading because it's like a soap opera.
It is. It's
one girl, three guys. One of them is her brother. it's great. There's also another one that I really like. I think Absolute Boyfriend was another one that I read and I hated the ending too.
Oh, yeah. Well, I read the other one by the same author. It was Fuchigi Yugi.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So actually, now that we're talking about this, I think the thing with lyrical Nanoha is because, like, as far as in Japan goes, I mean, obviously outside of Japan too, shoujo quickly devolved into, oh, it's really, the audience for shoujo isn't just girls. Like, it's like 30% guys. So, like, a lot of these shoujo genres end up having studios making traditionally shoujo shows for males as well.
Yeah, I mean,
and I mean vice versa. The both it comes back and forth basically.
That's
just
true.
Because like the anime industry in Japan is so much older than in like movie industry. I feel like mm-hmm. in terms of like exploring that boundary, like having, you know, everything is represented from the most over the top sexualization to the most innocence, right? Like,
yeah.
And you know, you have everything. Yeah. So it's not as,
there's always fan service.
So like, if it's not for you, it's not for you. Like there's like literally you'll find what you want out of the anime industry.
Yeah.
Right.
I think you're
like,
really,
you're not.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Go ahead.
Oh no. So I was just saying like, it's a little bit easier. Whereas like, you know, with Hollywood, when you see like, Black Widow, pose versus all the other Avengers, that's all you get. Like there's no other options.
The first show that actually the first magical girl show according to what I found on Google is that was kind of like expanding the audience was Magical Megchan, which is in 1974, and I love that the reasons it was listed as definitely expanding the audience is one of those fan service, which includes panty shots. And I was like, that makes so much sense. And I feel like there's just like when I see that in any show, then it immediately makes me not want to watch it. But I feel like this exists in a lot of magical girl shows. So it makes the genre very interesting, where it's both about empowering young women, but it's also about objectifying young women. Sometimes in the same show, often in the same show.
Oh yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'm trying to come to grips with this. Because it's like that's not because I was again like my whole frame of reference is like Cardcaptor.
Yeah, Cardcaptor is so wholesome.
And Sailor Moon.
Also pretty wholesome.
Sailor Moon has also it already veers into the less wholesome territory.
Which is probably why our masks actual play is still wholesome because I'm trying to replicate those.
Yeah. So wait,
fan service is a part of the magical girl genre?
It's a part of anime in general.
Oh yeah, I get that. I always thought magical.
It's just one facet of anime. I mean, like if you want a recent one, Magical Girl Doremi is a magical girl show that you know is intended for little girls.
Actually,
right?
For kids, yeah.
Yeah, like it's like I said, like you'll find fan service, but you also find lots of shows that don't have fan service.
Yes,
that's Doremi looks like Powerpuff.
The landscape is a lot bigger.
Yeah, Doremi is definitely one that does not have upskirt shots.
Also, there's a Little Witch Academia.
Yeah.
That was very recent, right? So, you know, these things exist side by side. There are shows that do both. There are shows that have no fan service. And there are shows that are that completely self-indulge in itself fan service.
Yeah.
Because, you know, there's different audiences for
everything. Yeah, for sure. And then there's all of those sports shows that now feature, like, a lot of... Or they're usually... I'm thinking about the ones that are, like, shonen sports shows that have all these, like, shirtless... boys because they
just swim one
Free.
Yeah, Free is great.
Yeah,
the best one this season is called Run with the Wind. They're not shirtless, but oh, it's so good. It's so wholesome. It's about these 10 boys in college living in this dorm and they just want to run. They just want to run a track team.
That's cute.
Just want to run. It is so sad because you're just like, oh, just let them run. It's so wholesome. Yeah, like it's like it's one. Yeah, because. And yeah, certainly the target audience for that show is not me, right? But I still enjoy it. It's literally just like, if anybody hurts these boys, I'm gonna hurt someone. Yeah. Like, don't hurt my boys.
The only one I know is Prince of Tennis.
Yeah. Oh my gosh, Prince of Tennis hit right at the time when I was like really hitting the stride of my puberty. Oh yeah, and also Cardcaptor Sakura. And I remember being so obsessed with them because there were so many boys. I think that was the first sports anime where they realized how much potential market there was with women as well.
Yeah.
Where they because like so much of their merchandise and all so much of the fan art and just like fan fiction was completely. From women audiences.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so.
Yeah, the fan base of Fujiyoshi's.
Yeah.
They go back real long, but yeah, like in recent years for sure they've grown to be a dominant market force.
Let's explain
every Fujiyoshi's. Season.
What is that?
They are so there's basically, you know, the anime fandom has it's just so big, like it's Japan's number one export, right? The industry is so big, and once you have an industry that's that big, it fractures, right? And there are sub industries, and so like I said, there's the industry of the, you know, older male otakus who, you know, like fan service. Mm-hmm. There's the, you know, kids. And one sector is called Fujiyoshis. There's also a sector called Fudanjoshi, which is the male counterpart of the same thing, I think.
Oh, that makes sense.
But basically, a Fujoshi, I might be pronouncing this wrong. I'm not Japanese, Fujoshi, I'm Chinese, to clarify. Might be Fujiyoshi. I have no idea. Okay, the literal translation means... I think ugly or bad thoughts woman.
Yeah.
Because it's the market of girls who like shows with pretty boys and have very innocent love between the pretty boys, and then they get to fan art it into not so innocent.
Yep.
And it's great. I mean, it's just another, I think, the anime industry. So as somebody who is a giant weeb, I think the anime industry's landscape is just beautiful. It is so inclusive. No other entertainment industry nor fandom is as inclusive as anime.
That's a really interesting way of thinking about it.
Yeah.
You can't see my
every
face.
Single
But
every single kink is
that's
covered.
True.
Like everyone has
that's
a place.
Daniel's face is like shook. Hashtag
I
shook.
I have so many tabs open on my computer right now because I'm trying to keep up.
Oh boy. Oh, it's quickly going to devolve into something else soon.
Yeah. It's certainly in the West, it certainly has a bad rep because, you know, the more hypersexualized side is way more visible.
Yeah.
Like, that's what gets a lot of traction and a lot of stereotypes.
Yeah.
But if you actually are part of the industry and, like, you go to cons, it's like, you know, everyone is just doing their own
thing,
right? It's... But I agree, especially inside right now. We are a board game or analog podcast, right? Inside this industry right now, it is it's got some work.
Yeah.
We've got some ways to go before we become as holistic and homogenous and varied as the actual anime industry.
Right. I think the sorry, I'm like Agatha said, I'm real shook.
Yeah.
Like, okay. Let me gather myself. So, like, okay, I've never played a magical girl themed RPG, like tabletop
Ooh.
RPG. Never. We should play one.
I need to rectify 100% this.
I want to.
I have not either.
Because it leads into one of the questions that we have from people online.
Mm-hmm.
But we'll go to that at the end because I need to think more about my response because I'm not ready yet.
Yeah.
One of the questions was, and we'll get to this at the end.
Yeah.
What does your transformation look like?
Yes.
Oh,
so, I'm still thinking about
that. I'm gonna give you, I'm gonna let you percolate on this, Ming, and then we'll come back to the question later.
Let both of you know ahead of time so you can come up with something, unless you already have one. But like, I've never played like a Magical Girl RPG, and my only encounter with a Magical Girl tabletop game was a negative one.
Oh,
at Gen Con.
I feel like,
well, that's your problem.
Probably guess what I'm gonna like. Okay, I was walking around and I saw this board game. I saw this giant like banner or whatever, and I was like, oh, okay, it's like Anime Girls board game. Cool. I go, and like, I think my first question is probably the same question that both of you would have, be like, where are the Asians at? Like, look, and it's just like, all I see are like white cosplayers.
Are we talking about this?
If this is a part of the tabletop,
I want to talk about
it. Oh, yeah,
this is part of the problem with tabletop anime. This is kind of
what I envisioned, because I was like, after that incident, I was like, this is real, like, there's something wrong here.
Right.
Because the entire team design team was all white dudes. There was a lot of fan service, which had me shook, because again, up until this point, I did not associate fan service
with the magical girl
genre.
Right. Yeah, that's fair.
And then they had women in cosplay demoing the game.
Right.
White women.
Right.
In Asian costumes, Asian looking costumes. Yeah.
The current state of anime in board games is Asians aren't very involved. And that is just because we're not in Asia and board games aren't as popular in Asia. Right. And because they're like, you know, you have this thing which grew very naturally over decades in Japan that is able to include all kinds of, you know, all kinds of fans, right? Fan service literally to every genre. Like, fan service doesn't just mean sexualization. Yes. Fan service can be trains, right? Like, an anime that has very detailed, hyper-realistic trains, that's fan service.
True.
But in America, fan service only means one thing, because it's a lot younger and a lot more immature, and that's all they see. And so with board gaming being such a new industry, that's kind of just what's taken root first, which is a little bit unfortunate. And that's kind of where it's kind of part of what I'm doing. Like, I want to make anime and board games come together a little bit more.
Like, I make games,
and I mean, I'm not. I make fan games of anime that I really like. And I mean, I'm not like, I like fan service. Like, I'm not going to deny it, right? It's just another. But I like everything anime. But the industry currently is not nearly as diverse and varied as the actual anime community, unfortunately. But that's not to say there's no good anime board games out there. A little bit shout outs. Z-Man Games has published Shadowhunters, which is a great anime
book. Okay.
Exceed Season 2 by Level 99 Games, also an incredibly good, gorgeous anime board game. Warriors of Jogu by Monsu Games, I think, or Monsu Productions, also a gorgeous looking anime board game. So it's out there, it's growing. The lack of Asians in the anime scene and board games, it's sad.
Yeah.
Whoa.
It's sad. I mean, maybe we'll get there one day. I'm trying my best. I applied for a panel at Gen Con. I applied for a panel at Gen Con that's already been accepted, that talks about the use of Asian culture and themes in analog board games, with Banana and Sin Fong Lim. But I also applied for another panel at the same time, basically to talk about the state of the industry as far as anime and tabletop are concerned, crossing.
Ooh.
And one was accepted, the other was not. So,
yo, I want to play Seed.
Oh, did you look at pictures of it?
It's a card game, right? Exceed?
Exceed is great. Exceed is a 1v1 fighting card game.
Yeah, that's I want to play this game.
Oh. Yeah, so let's actually go back to, like, what are the
because you were almost going to start talking about the subversion of the magical girl genre. Now that we've kind of talked about the history and a lot of the themes that are associated with the magical girl genre, what is the subversion that you were talking about with Mahoushoujo Madoka Magica?
We've talked about what makes a magical girl anime. You have evil monsters, external evil forces show up, mascot shows up, recruits innocent middle schooler to fight the evil, eventually defeat the external evil with lots of metaphors, and just show about the girl herself growing up, becoming a more, I don't want to say adult because high school isn't really adulthood, but in this context, it is. It's puberty, right? With Madoka Magica, which came out in 2011, it actually has a lot of interesting history behind it. Basically, the anime was advertised as if it was just another slice of life, really cutesy for kids. Magical girl show. The advertising was very, very innocent.
Wow.
Right? Very, very innocent. In fact, spoiler territory immediately. The show came out 9 years ago. If you haven't watched it and you're interested in getting to Magical Girls,
skip ahead.
This talk is trying to convince you to get into it anyway.
Well, that was the question. Actually, the question was what's the best place to start?
Yeah. Oh, what's the best place to start? If you want to get started onto modern magical girl anime, and you haven't, and you've already watched shows like Sailor Moon, Madoka Magica is certainly the best place to start. Like, there's no question about it.
Right. So you were,
but okay, yeah. Talking about subversion. Basically, it was advertised as a very, very innocent show, and then it's the same trappings. You have your main character is a middle schooler girl with pink hair, very bright, innocent. She gets recruited by this very cute plushy mascot who's this like little Kalkubi, which is like a little rabbit doll kind of mascot, who's like, hey, sign this contract and we need your help to fight off witches, and I'll make you into a magical girl, giving you powers, and you'll be a warrior of justice. And she's like, oh yeah, that sounds awesome. And then she drags her friend into it and they go off and fight magical girls. And then they meet another magical girl who's like their senpai. And then on episode 3, it was already a little bit weird and disturbing, but in episode 3, they get into a fight and they just get killed. Like, brutally murdered by monsters. Like, murder. Like, it is very gruesome, and it just almost comes out of nowhere. It doesn't really, because there are hints. So all of a sudden, the main character is like, whoa, this job, this contract, this magical girl dream is nowhere near as, like, wonderful as I thought it was.
Right.
This is actually dangerous. Right. Like, you're fighting to protect the world. And basically, the entire show comes down to her realizing that the magical mascot was actually orchestrating some kind of universe grand scheme where he recruits girls to fight evil, and then if they lose faith, they become evil, but then he's actually benefiting because he's collecting their emotions.
Oh, snap.
It's very, very, very crazy. Like, there's time travel involved. In the end, the main character literally becomes God.
As you do.
It's a crazy show.
What?
As you do. So it's very crazy because, okay, so where the subversion comes in, right? So I gave you a really quick glimpse synopsis. If that makes you interested, go watch it. It's a great show. So here's where the subversion comes in. It asks, where does the mascot come from? Right? That's number one. And why does a mascot want to fight the evil? Why does a mascot show up and always recruit a young girl and says your innocence is so important to you having powers? Like that makes no sense if you think about it for a second. And the show basically explains it as the mascot is actually the mastermind. They're orchestrating this whole thing and they want to recruit young girls because they're easily manipulable. And the second question is subverts, where does the evil come from? Because the evil is always external. And the way the show tries to answer that is that the evil, the external evil, the witches, are just magical girls that has fallen.
Ooh.
Right? So it's the first show that really does this. It's not the first show. I keep saying that, but it's the first successful show that does this. And that's really all that matters, right? And so ever since that show, over the last 8 years, a lot of shows have tried to do this. And I want to talk about two particular shows, both within the last year. So that they're very recent examples that does this, and where the State of the Magical Girl show is now. If you want to get into that now. Okay, so there's two. The first one I'll start off with is Magical Girl Ore, which aired last year, beginning of last year. The manga was written in 2013, I believe. But basically, so after 2011, it was when Madoka came out, the mangas also started changing, and now the anime is catching up. Ore, which means, Ore means I, which is, but in Japanese, I has a female and male pronoun attached to it. So Ore means the male, masculine I. So Magical Ore is the magical girl, masculine myself, because the whole premise of the show is, evil shows up, a magical mascot shows up. The magical mascot is actually a old man Yazuka, and the old man Yazuka actually ends up getting like a plushy gangster. Oh yeah, he's a gangster. Like he's a super old gangster, like cartoony gangster, like with a scar down his left eye. He wears sunglasses and he's really rude. And but he has the body of like a plushy stuffed toy. And so he shows up, he gives what gives magical powers to this little girl who's like, I want to save this guy I have a crush on. And then he transforms, into a super muscular dude, And she's like, wait, what? This isn't what I signed up for. And then the, but the premise, the, you know, the subversion of the show is like, did you really think that the most practical way for you to fight evil is to like be a little girl? Like, no, we're gonna jam pack you full of muscle and here's a gun. Except she refuses to take the gun. It's a really funny comedy bit. And so instead, what he does, he gives her like hair clips, like really cute hair clips. Because she's like, no, I don't want that gun. Don't you have like a more cute weapon? He's like, here's some hair clips. He's like, throw it at the enemy, and then she throws it, and they turn out the grenades. It's funny. It's like, no, like we have to be practical. Like, you don't get laser beams. Here's some guns and grenades.
Yo, I want to watch this.
It's very funny. It's super, super funny.
I think it's an anime.
It's an anime now. Yeah. But yeah, it's going the other direction, right? It's going, let's not ask these serious questions, but let's poke fun at the genre itself, whereas like a lot of these things don't make sense. Instead of trying to explain it in dark ways, let's explain it in comedic ways, which is a great direction. There's a lot of shows like this. Zombie Deska is another one where like the magical girl is a guy who like gets killed and then gets revived as a zombie, but a zombie magical girl.
a lot of anime in general is, I feel like there's a lot of comedy in these examples with like the magical genre, but also just within anime in general, where there's still, I feel like they're still catching up on some of the LGBT stuff. So like there's still some of that like trans for like I think there's some like tone deafness in terms of like cross dressing for humor still, that it's like very not trans friendly, but it
certainly depends on the genre. There's a, I think if there's a good show about it, there's Genshiken, which is a Genshiken has a second season, the second manga
about?
Arc. So volume 10 and beyond. The first season of Genshiken was the first 9 volumes. There was a like 8-year gap, and then they picked it up, and the author wrote another series based on the same. It's still Genshiken, just continued, and there is a
go ahead.
There's
a
cross-dressing character. That's very, very
good. For context for the listeners and for you, Agatha, Genshiken was this manga that came out like in the early 2000s. It's one of the ones that like my high school got. And it's just about like otaku culture. But specifically about this like school club and their love of otaku stuff. But it's really good. I like the art a lot. And
nice. Yeah.
Yeah, it's the tone deafness is, like I said, certainly it's
the
there. It is used for comedic effect. But this one is literally, this one is more like Shazam. Like, she is a tiny little middle school girl, and she transforms into, like, Shaq.
Right.
It's completely comedic. Yeah. But yeah, you're right. Like, but yeah, kind of this goes back to my old point. Is like, certainly, there's
yeah,
other
I feel
shows
like anime
there,
is really progressive in some ways, even just in its embrace, for example, of like even the like the Fujoshi culture and like all the anime and manga that kind of came out of that, like BL manga, which is basically for it's called stands for boys love, and it's like for just like gay romances basically, and then there's also GL, which is like gay romances between women. But then in other areas, it's still it doesn't see its blind spots. So, I feel like anime is always a mixed bag, and it's even the case with Magical Girls, where there's some part of it it's like so cool and so empowering, and I think that's what a lot of people are drawn when they make these Magical Girl role playing games. At least the ones that I'm thinking of, like For Love and Justice, and then also Domino Magica. These two games they're drawing on the more like a Sentai based so okay. like Sailor Moon kind of
superheroes,
yeah, where it's just basically smashing together two genres of like girls with magic and then also we're superheroes,
okay,
that kind of vibe, and that's really positive. And then there are other stuff that we also need to take with an awareness of what it is.
There's actually on that note, there's another anime called Cutie High Earth Defense Club, I believe, that is the same Sentai formula of Magical Girls, very, very Sailor Moon-ish. But it takes place in an all-boys high school. And it's basically the same formula, and it just asks, well, what if they were just boys? Like, no cross-dressing or anything. Yeah. What if they're just boys? And they transform into, like, their costumes look kind of like a drumline, like male drumline drummers, but very colorful, very, very colorful. And it's great. It's right. Like you said, the certain parts are tone deaf, but you know, it's the industry is so wide. Like everyone gets what they want.
In a way, yeah,
it's crazy. But okay. So moving, I guess if we moving on to more, even as far as Magical Girl is concerned, even more dark subversion. So the modern day this year, basically, Magical Ore was an example of. What if we just, you know, slapstick comedied it? The other hyper spectrum is literally this season. There's an anime called Magical Girl Spec Ops Asuka, which is, it's pretty fan service heavy, but I would say not even that bad. But the premise of the show is so crazy. It is essentially saying Madoka Magica was like child's play in terms of asking the real questions.
Okay.
So let me just read you the premise of the show. All right. So in this show, instead of one monster shows up in one neighborhood, monsters show up all over the world. Because why would a monster just happen to show up next to this high school or middle school? Right. It shows up all over the world. And when monsters show up all over the world, not just one mascot show up and recruit one individual middle schooler. They show up all over the world too. And so basically it explains it as the monsters are basically a country or a race from a different dimension. And from the same dimension, the spirits, the mascots are also here. And so when the mascots invade Earth, when the monsters invade Earth, the mascots come to Earth and basically cooperate with Earth's various governments and says, we'll help you fight off these monsters. So it answers a lot of questions of saying, no, if monsters starting attacking people, this isn't going to be isolated to just a middle school neighborhood. The monsters aren't just going to show up every single week, just coincidentally next to the same girl. The government is definitely going to get involved because why would they not? And magic is definitely going to get militarized. Right, the government is going to be the one signing the contracts, and they're going to be helping the Magical Girls fight off this literal alien army. And so the premise of the show within the first episode is that every single nation are like forming contracts to help fight off, and all the world comes together to face off this alien force, very Avengers style, and they fight them off. And so basically, one of the opening scenes is literally all the different countries' armies are just in ruins. They're super gruesomely destroyed. Two characters are alive. One dude's missing his arm, and he's just like, I can't believe all the armies in the world come together, the best of the best, and all we can do is just like still end up relying on these girls. And then, you know, cuts away to the girls and there's five of them and they're like, so many of other allies have died. And it's just like only five magical girls left. There's like one from China, one from Europe, one from America. So like, and then they defeat the final boss, right? And that all happens within That's the first insane. 5 minutes. Because the show sets it up by answering these questions and saying, no, this is what a real situation might look like. And then jumps 3 years later and says, but the real question is what the hell would actually happen? And 3 years later, the war has ended. And basically the main character that you follow is one of the surviving magical girls that quote unquote saved the world. And she's in a modern world full of cynics and like people who praise her. There's people who are like, sure, they defeated the monsters, but you know, the world hasn't been really been safe. Now there's magic in the world. Terrorists have become even stronger. The black market now trades magical goods. Where are the magical girls now? Literally the news shows a news piece of like, one of the magical girls, the remaining five, was spotted with a drug cartel. And so like, and like they're out of a job. Right. They're literally just veterans. Like veterans of the world doesn't know what to do with. And it's super, super interesting because literally the main character you follow basically just has PTSD because the main characters, they were the generals in this war and the aliens obviously went after them first. And so the aliens assassinated her family and basically tried to psychologically take out the magical girls when they couldn't physically. And so it's crazy. Like it goes builds upon this idea of like, the military are involved. They need magical girls. But now that the war, quote unquote, is over, we've now integrated with this new magical society. We've essentially upgraded. This is basically a change from swords to guns, right? What happens when we change from guns to magic? They ask a lot of questions similar to the Spider-Man movie, where, you know, the alien parts and spaceships are in the wreckage, but all of a sudden the black market now is trading alien weaponry. And it's really, really crazy because it is essentially the subversion of the subversion. Like, no, the mascot isn't like some all evil being. This is just politics. This is just one nation invading another nation, and this is just what happens. You know, the girls were told that they were saving the world. If they defeated the big bad guy, the world peace will come, and they did, and then it didn't. Like people still fighting.
Yeah, this would be such an amazing story to tell. I'm trying to think of what RPGs would work with this. I feel like The Watch could work, maybe if it was
The Watch could.
Yeah. Or
It's very, very. It's just. It's so today. Yeah. Like it's literally airing right now, and it's just like Jesus. This is. They just keep pushing it farther.
It's
like, and farther.
It's very. Yeah. It's really far in theme from like the origins of the magical girl genre, but it kind of also makes sense as like a natural progression of where it would end up today with the things that people care about, right? And also the desire for people, like a lot of, I think people want to see darker explorations and more realistic explorations of things that they enjoyed as kids, like you said before. Yeah. So would you consider making a magical girl board game to counter all the other ones that are not?
Well, yeah, I was going to ask, like, what is the solution if we have a big problem with this in RPGs and board games when there's clearly this like amazingly diverse genre in Japan? Like how do we solve this problem in tabletop? Like what is the solution?
I mean, it's certainly. So here's the thing. My personal feeling when I went to a lot of board gaming conventions for the first time this year was one of almost odd hostility from board gamers, where the moment something has anime on it, they already are like, gross. Ew. That's that fan service stuff. And so, like, it's this weird situation where, like, the board game, I think the nerd fandom of board games has traditionally never liked anime, in my opinion. They've always been the tabletop gamer, the Warhammer, like war gaming gamer, and they never really got into anime. And they're like, anything that's anime is just bad. It's, you know, Chinese cartoons. And they are the people that I unironically call people weebs as an insult. And so, like, it's bad because you have these both sides. Like, one side is, okay, the immature anime scene has already settled in. And then the other side is anime is only immature. So like it makes actual anime fans almost like not want to engage in this hobby, right? Like when I, so the games I've made, I always love seeing people comment, like a lot of the people who have played my anime fan board games have never played real hobby board games. Their opinions of board games are a monopoly still, right? This fandom hasn't crossed over. So, I mean, yeah, that's my, you know, that's my solution. Like, that's what I think is going to be the best way to do it. And it's just, you just could keep going. You keep cracking at it. And eventually, hopefully, both sides change their opinions.
It is literally like a clash of cultures as well.
Yeah, it's true.
That's interesting. Yeah, I mean, like, this is funny because we're talking now and I didn't realize that I knew about your work long before we even interacted on Facebook. Because, like, we arranged this episode through Facebook after I posted on our on a secret group that we're all in. But I had the non-exclusive group, the but non-exclusive also secret group. And I realized that I had read about your work on Kotaku last year when they very publicly spoke about your Fire Emblem board game that got shut down by Nintendo.
Yeah.
Very quickly. Very quickly. They took down my website, my Facebook, everything. It was scary.
I mean, yeah.
The Nintendo lawyers are hardcore.
They gotta be if they're making the big bucks.
Damn.
Yeah. Yeah. My other fan games have not been nearly as targeted. Like Persona 5, the Persona 5 board game has been really well received as well. The Kotaku article did really well. And Atlas hasn't done anything. They don't care. Like, it's a fan game. The fan community thrives when they make
and I mean, like,
products,
Nintendo, I mean, Nintendo was hard on people posting YouTube videos of Nintendo games.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're super hardcore. There was this guy who was remaking Zelda Breath of the Wild in NES style, like 2D top-down NES style. It was super cool. It was the game recreated as the classic top-down 2D, and he posted it. And then after several months, it got an article on Kotaku. Wow. And then it was like, nope.
It's like Kotaku's gotta stop featuring these things. Yeah. And how do you expose like amazing work?
Yeah.
It's interesting. It's certainly a red badge of courage within the Nintendo fan base. It's like all the Nintendo fans who make fan art and fan works, like they, I think their end goal essentially is to be noticed by Nintendo Sakai and be slapped with the DMCA. It is. At least that's how I felt. A lot of people feel the same way.
So we, before recording this, we asked our listeners for questions that they want to pose to us. And we, we're getting a little bit of echo from your end.
Oh, yeah, that must be from your end.
Yeah.
I can fix this in editing, so.
Okay. I think, Ming, are you still there?
Yeah.
Perfect.
Boom.
Great. I am still here. Okay, so we have quite a few questions, and I think we touched on some of these already in our discussions. I'm just going to read them out. Let's see.
Go for it. No, we are running out of time.
Okay. Yeah.
So this is the perfect time to do questions.
Yeah. I think a really cool question from Yoshi is tips for playing a magical girl when you, anyone, the person playing it, is definitely not a young teenage schoolgirl. And like also what not to do when you're doing this. So this is more like on the RPG side or like board gaming. So like how do you play these characters when you're just, that's not the experience that you had. And also if there's a... they reference the kimchi rule from the game The Long Drive to...
Busan. Yeah, Cleo's game.
Yeah, Cleo's game.
I was going to say that. That's my answer. Like, don't do the voices. Don't do any of that stuff.
Yeah.
And Cleo's game was like, don't talk about kimchi.
Yeah. Yeah, I feel like if you, like, don't do the voice where you're like, oh my gosh. Like, don't do that anime girl voice because, like, I know what you're trying to do. You don't need to do that. That's okay.
That's the answer I thought of. It's just like, don't talk about kimchi. That's the don't talk about kimchi rule.
Yeah. Hmm. Well, I'm going to go with the, I'm going to hit you with the counter argument, devil's advocate, and harken back to, I think, your first episode where you talked about playing Asians in tabletop games. And it's always been, I think I quote, I think you said, I always thought I was playing an Asian character. Like, I don't need a guide for it. And so the feeling is almost going to be like, don't play a little girl if you're not a little girl. But at the same time, well, this game is about playing little girls, mm-hmm. just like this game is about playing a Korean character. And at that point, you're already opting into that. Just like if somebody plays Oriental Adventures, you're opting into, I'm playing an Asian character.
Okay,
I think it's the same thing. If you're like, opting into it, it's assumed that you're playing a character, so you don't have to do the voice.
Yes, that's a really good point.
That's like an extension of both of our ideas.
So you don't need any specific signifiers. And then if there are themes that you want to explore, you can talk about that with your table and say, hey, these are things that I'm interested in within this specific demographic. Like, are we all comfortable with this? And how do y'all feel about it? So then I think some of these things, if you just talk about it, then, and everyone is on board, then you can run with it. But otherwise, you don't need to do any affectations that would signify that you're definitely a teenage girl or whatever. But it's more on a thematic side, I think, that matters more.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, you're just yourself, but a teenage girl, like. Don't change that. You're still you're still
teenage
playing
girls
whatever
also
you think you want to be.
Care about
you know?
Life like other people do.
You mean like yeah.
They're not a different race.
Japanese or not. So and then the other question, this is the $1 million question. What is our transformation sequence? What does it look like?
Oh, okay, God. So what if we provide some like background information, like what is the series? What are we fighting? Like, what is the theme? Right? Because like Sailor Moon is like I don't know, do a pose.
Yeah, that's
like,
a good
like
pose.
The solar system
looks really good. Like, wow. Okay.
Just forget I ever did that. I threw up my hands like a mime.
Yeah,
that's my magical girl pose. I mime.
Oh. That could be a thing. We could all be various.
I'm thinking of the Detective Pikachu trailers.
Don't even talk to me about Detective Pikachu.
I am excited about that.
I hate Ryan Reynolds'
voice.
Are you
not excited about it?
Ryan Reynolds.
I don't feel one way about Ryan Reynolds or another. Okay, like this is not shade against him, but I just cannot handle a Pikachu that is not basically voiced by a woman. Like, I can't have it not be the high-pitched voice. Like, it just bought...
No, but in trailer number two, when, you know, he Pikachu goes in to fight Charizard, and he goes, Pika, Pika, and it's perfect.
No, I hate it.
It's perfect.
Okay, well, so it's true to the source material.
Yep.
Because the Detective Pikachu games, is like a deep voice. And so the meme actually when the games first came out was that the localization, the voice actor would be Don DeVito.
All right.
So certainly Ryan Reynolds is better than
this. This is definitely a hill that I don't feel like battling on.
We agree to disagree that Ryan Reynolds is the perfect Pikachu voice actor.
Oh my gosh, yes.
Yes.
We agree to disagree.
I'm on that side.
All right, back to transformation
sequences. So what is the theme of our Magical Girl series? Like, are we all on the same team?
Yeah, we should be the same team, okay. I guess. Yeah.
So,
is this a Doremi style, or is this a Madoka subversion?
Is it like Sailor Moon, super... where like you know, like everything blocks us, so then our clothes change, and
yeah.
Like, how is it?
Yeah, I think...
No fan service.
I think for the sake of Daniel, we should stick to maybe the Sentai style. And so it's not dark, and we're fighting evil.
Well, we could make it dark.
Oh, all right. Okay.
I'll just vibe off of you guys. I only have a very innocent one right now.
Oh, all right.
It mostly involves cats.
That's fair. Let's see. I feel like we would be a very salty group, full of quips.
Okay.
Right? I mean, okay. I would be very salty, so there's that.
You know, I immediately went into food themed.
Okay, we could also be food themed.
Well, we don't have because you said salty, but maybe because I'm hungry.
I feel like that could totally be a thing, though. Can't we be food themed?
With like a magical girl cooking group? Solving world hunger?
I feel like that has to exist already. I don't know of it.
I mean,
but
I've seen an anime where
there's one of everything.
It's like a bunch of different boys who are different foods, so we can just be different foods.
I thought do you remember another childhood anime, Fighting Foodons?
What? What?
Oh, yes.
God. What
was that an anime?
Yes.
I only.
Yes,
it was on Fighting for Kids, Futons, I think.
It was an anime and a manga, and it was literally about these people who would cook up anthropomorphic foods.
Whoa.
And they would fight.
What?
Yeah. And one of the characters I remember so vividly, because I was like, I really want a shirt of this, that the character's name is Fried Ricer in the English translation.
Uh-huh.
Like, oh man, I'll show you after.
Okay. So, all right, let's be different foods, like different food themes. I would like to be mango.
Oh, that's a good one. Passion fruit. I'm passion fruit.
Oh, are we fruits?
Yeah, I'm passion
fruit. We can be fruits. Yeah.
I also think the passion fruit's a good
fruits
name,
is a
too.
Good theme.
Yeah,
a good
passion fruit. Yeah, it's true.
What colors fruits are really cute, too.
Oh.
I would take dragon fruit. I want to be a Chinese fruit.
And dragon fruit sounds fierce, too.
Yeah.
Dragon fruit, passion fruit.
Mango. wait
a sec. In my head, I was like, dragon fruit, passion fruit, mango fruit.
But I don't
star
like
star fruit would be
taste,
a very
though.
Good
sorry.
Yeah. No, it's okay. You gotta be you're the different one.
I wanna be mango. Mango tastes so good. That's the only one I'll
papaya.
Papaya
that,
fruit.
Doesn't ring as papaya fruit. Okay. So what's our fruit transformations? If we're saving the world from like evil, unhealthy snacks and we are the fruits.
Oh sure.
There's no fruit flies.
Ew, so
there's
gross.
A race
I
of giant
it.
Fruit flies.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
Are we writing a game right now?
Oh, exactly. Maybe. So, okay, transformation sequence.
TM.
Oh, TM. What is our, what's the object? Well,
okay, so for mine, it has to be like bubble themed, because when you open up a passion fruit, there's all the little seeds that you eat, mm-hmm. kind of like a pomegranate.
Yeah.
And those are like, they like, fly around in like a tornado around
yes,
me.
Yes,
and
I'm into
like,
it.
And because they're like kind of translucent, you could see my like silhouette inside.
Yeah,
and I'm doing this like a pirouette. I'm like spinning in circles,
uh-huh.
and then they all fall to the ground.
Mm-hmm.
And but the ground is it looks like balloons are all over the place,
mm-hmm.
and they're all kind of translucent and pearlescent. Mm-hmm. They're sparkling.
Wow.
And I'm like standing there.
Have you thought this through already?
No. Yes.
Wow.
What?
Okay, that's good. I like that. What about you, Ming?
Yeah, no, I think I like the general trend of hatching from our fruit. Like, I'd like it if I was like, the transformation sequence is just like, it cuts to a giant version of a dragon fruit, and it spins around and it's glowing, and then the fruit peels back, revealing like, you know, the dragon fruit flesh, and then like it just, you know, explodes, and then there I am.
Oh,
yeah. Dragon fruit armor.
Cool. Yeah, I didn't think about my outfit. Though.
Yeah.
I think my outfit would look pearly, like the inside.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay.
With accents of orange and yellow.
Oh, I'm so into it. I think
I learned from both of you. It was all about transformation. So I was like, I'm going to make this about like growing up.
Yeah. Yeah. I think mine is, my character would probably carry around a giant pillow that is shaped like a mango. And then whenever
I wasn't expecting that.
So whenever she needs to transform, she'll like punch the pillow and then it'll like start the transformation sequence. And yeah, I guess if she punches it, then she can like be inside of it, and then so we can do the birthing
thing. No, I was gonna, what if you like punch it and you punch it and then like, you know how like the mango's got that like tough skin?
Yeah.
You punch it and the tough skin like covers your fist like armor, like it comes up your arm.
Oh, sick.
Like covers your body. So yours is almost like, it's like a Power Rangers transformation.
Oh, okay. I'm into
it's, like,
that.
It starts from
That's
your
better.
Hand because you punch this. You maybe hold the mango in your left hand.
Yeah.
You punch it with your right hand.
Yeah. Yeah.
Covers you with his mango armor.
Yeah. And then like the camera just like, spins around you while this.
While it's like covering you.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah. I think my outfit is definitely much more Sentai. It's just like bodysuit.
But it smells sweet.
Yeah, Abby.
And it looks super, super bad. Yeah, we all smell really great.
Yeah, we all smell great.
Oh, man. And I would definitely like a visor.
When you said visor, I'm thinking the ancient visor.
Yeah, the one my mom definitely has a couple.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking of. Oh, man.
Yeah, that's what I want. I want that kind of visor.
If you, dear listener, are a good illustrator, I would be very curious to see what this Magical Girl team looks like.
Yeah. Wow.
Dragon fruit, passion fruit, and mango fruit.
Mango fruit. Fruit in brackets.
Yeah. And we're just called, and then the whole series would be called Super Sweet.
Yeah. Oh. Oh. Whoa.
Oh my god. That actual play?
Whoa. TM. That's amazing. Oh.
Okay.
Wow. I think this is, oh, this is perfect. Well, Ming, do you have any projects that you're working on?
Yeah, sure. Plug. I am currently working on a Steven Universe fan game. So, if you like Steven Universe, that is my current project.
Steven Universe tech, like a magical girl show as well?
This is what people have told me.
I've been thinking about this. I love Steven Universe.
Literally has a magical girl transformation scene.
Yeah.
Which pays a homage to the Magical Girl series. So, like, in the latest season, when Steven goes into, okay, this is spoilers.
No, it's been on for a while.
You're right. Spoiler alert.
When Steven Universe first transforms into Pink Diamond's outfit, they very much so use a Magical Girl transformation scene to do so.
Mm.
Okay. Oh my god! So if you're gonna draw Super Sweet,
yeah.
Passion fruit, dragon fruit, mango fruit. Or mango. I think it should be passion fruit and dragon fruit on the sides, mm-hmm. and mango in the center.
Yeah.
It's super sweet, but in the style of Steven Universe.
Okay, I would like to request a pose. Mango bracket fruit is definitely like holding her arms crossed in front of her chest.
Like a mummy?
Well, I was thinking in a more aggressive way, but...
Like a mummy? I'm thinking like...
No! Not like a corpse, like I'm ready to fight.
Okay, I wanna be like standing up straight with my hands like a point.
Oh, like high above you.
Yeah,
like you're maybe stretching for yoga.
Like I'm stretching for yoga.
Okay, I got it.
Yeah.
No, this is a classic Sentai pose, right? Like with the arms crossed in front of you.
I'm thinking of.
I remember this.
Not dabbing, but like.
Oh, that's true like too.
Usain Bolt.
Yeah.
Thing.
Yeah, true. Okay, what's your pose?
Oh man. I don't even know. I guess I would just be Naruto running across the
bathroom. Oh my god!
You're just running and Naruto running behind us.
The most weeb thing I can think of. So
I guess literally doing standing like a mummy.
No, a Sentai.
A super Sentai, yes. Agatha, and I'm
pirouetting.
I'm pirouetting.
I'm stretching.
I think I'm pirouetting actually.
Oh, okay, that's good.
Arm spread. It's more dynamic, I think.
Yeah.
In the style of Steven Universe, underneath it is, what was this? Super Sweet.
TM.
Super Sweet Syndicate.
Oh, I don't know.
No, that sounds evil.
Syndicate does sound evil.
Super Sweet.
Yeah, Super Sweet.
Well, you have to name it the magical Maho Shoujo Super Sweet.
Super Sweet.
Oh, what?
Less.
You have to TM.
Less that. Oh.
Yo, is that our next actual play?
Oh, maybe. Maybe.
Forget masks. We're doing now. No.
No, we're still going to do masks. But okay, so the board game, the Steven Universe board game.
Yes. Before we got sidetracked.
Oh yeah, that is my current fan project. Not a lot has been posted on it, unless you're on my Discord channel, which I post constantly. I have a very active Discord, so if you like anime memes, anime video games. Come join my Discord. It's the link is going to be on any of my socials if you look up Brother Mean Games. So yeah, you can find me on Discord. You can find me on social media. I'm working on Steven Universe, but I'm also working on a couple of original games that I will hopefully take the Kickstarter with. Ooh. Because being a fan game developer or designer or maker, it's not getting me far enough. I need to have a real game published.
Yeah, your own IP.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh,
that's exciting. Yeah, definitely. Yes, we will update once you have updates on whatever the game that you're working on, the non Steven Universe.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, if you like Steven Universe, that is certainly my main focus right now.
Very cool. Well, thank you so much, Ming, for joining us.
No, this was enlightening. Like the whole time, I've kind of just been like reading on my computer, like commenting. But then listening to both of you and my face has just been like...
Yeah, I'm going to describe Daniel's expression. Eyes wide, mouth also slightly open.
Yeah.
Yeah, the anime scene is so wide and the Magical Girl anime scene is also so wide. Like, basically, you want high school sports team Magical Girl? There's that. You want a musical? number magical girl show. There's one that's literally just about a bunch of girls who are like they're in Glee Club. And they're magical girl Glee right. Club members, and they fight, and like the whole fight scenes are magical, like are a musical right. production.
Yeah, it's if great. You want,
like everything yeah. is covered, whatever you want. The genre itself
yeah,
is
yeah. You
so
want
huge.
A mermaid who is also a singer and transforms using her plastic microphone? You got it.
Sweet.
If it's not, if you don't have it yet, it will be. You'll, yeah. you'll
so,
get it.
So that's.
There's probably at least a manga.
So that's Twitter. That's all of your socials, actually. So that's Twitter, Instagram, at Brother Ming Games. And, of course, you can download your games at brotherminggames.com.
Yes, brotherminggames.com. Everything, all of the projects I've made are free print-to-plays. And they're also free on Tabletop Simulator. So
amazing.
Great. Thank you so much again.
Yeah, thanks so much. This was amazing.
Yeah. This was very fun to really deep dive with someone about anime, which I haven't done in a while.
And dear listener, once again, we humbly request something that looks like super sweet passion fruit, mango fruit, dragon fruit.
Yep.
Dragon fruit, Naruto running, passion fruit, pirouetting, and mango fruit. Fruit.
Sentai. Super Sentai. Yes.
Thank you so much, Ming. Thank you so much. This has been an amazing episode.
Mm-hmm. Yes, thanks for having me.
All right. Have a good one.
Thanks to Brother Ming for joining us for this episode of Asians Represent. And thank you, listener, for tuning in.
If you want to listen to more from the One Shot Podcast Network, there is Backstory. Backstory is a cozy, thoughtful interview show featuring the most fascinating folks in role-playing. Join host Alex Roberts as she gets to know game designers, LARP rights, scholars, community organizers, and more. From emergent artists to seasoned veterans, guests open up about their creative process, what keeps them engaged, and their visions for the future of role-playing. Her podcast is so good. I listen to it all the time.
Yeah. I was on episode 50.
Yeah, you were.
We got to get you on that.
Yeah, you
did. We should talk to Alex, maybe do a collab.
Collab, yeah. Yeah, collab. Should.
Now, if you have any questions about this episode's themes, the games and anime series discussed, mm-hmm. or anything else related to Asians Represent, get in touch with us on Twitter at AZNSRepresent, Instagram and Facebook at AZNSRepresent, or by email at AZNSRepresent@oneshotpodcast.com. I'm Daniel.
And I'm Agatha.
And you've just listened to
Asians Represent!